Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's March the 3rd, 2006, a Friday. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's now of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. Dave Dickey will be along in just a few moments to take a look at the agricultural news for the day. And we'll visit the Spice Box a little later in the program. Jim Angel will update us on the latest from the Midwest and the weather story just after the bottom of the hour. It all happens on this Friday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
In Kansas City on this Friday afternoon, futures in the March wheat pit finished at $4.43 a bushel. They were up 6.5 cents on the day. The March wheat in Chicago up 4.5 cents at 373.5. May futures 385. They were up 4.5 for the day. From the corn pit in Chicago, March contract at 228.75 settlement price up a quarter. May up a quarter at 239.5, and July futures 249.25 finished unchanged. December corn at 265.5, up a half for the day. Soy complex now, March beans 593.25, up 2.25. May futures at 606, up 2 cents. July futures 617.25, 2.5 higher. And the November contract for your harvest month up 0.75 cents today at $6.27.5 at the end of the day. March bean meal from the products, $1.75.10, down $1.10. March bean oil at $24.56. They were up 19 for the day. From the Mercantile Exchange, feeder cattle finished at $106.32.5, off 82.5 cents today. In the May or March contract, the April lean cattle, or live cattle rather, at 77.5 cents lower at 86.02.5. And now the lean hogs, April contract there at $62 even. They finished the day unchanged. Joining us this afternoon to take a look at what happened to the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange is Mike Zuzulo, Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Hey, Todd.
Well, I want to take a look at this just a bit and step back from the market. We've been talking about pennant formations and all kinds of things and a breakout in the bean in the pennant, and then, of course, the outside up day yesterday in the corn pit. And then if you take a look at the weekly changes, you have the corn up just a penny from last week, and the beans, well, they managed a pretty good rally, up 16 cents. What do you make of it all?
Well, I think the later part of the week, we would assume, was, you know, probably a market where the trade disconnected itself with more of the fundamentals of the fact that the export sales were off almost 30% against the four-week average in beans, and they really disregarded the fact that you've had, you know, 14 new countries come up with bird flu in 1 month, and it switched to species, you know, and it was in a German cat. It seemed like the trade just didn't want to follow through on that kind of news. And the volume, as many people have told us this week, both in Kansas City and in Chicago, the volume as the market went down earlier on was very, very light, and that gave the technicians some really big hope that they could get something spurred and maybe be able to hold the lows. And I think, you know, our mindset was meal was able to hold the low very, very nicely yesterday, and it probably led the market psychologically that maybe this was all we needed to do for now. And then we can't underestimate, in our view, the fact that silver made a fresh 19-year high yesterday on news that, you know, a major mining company was going to go on strike. I think it was in Mexico. And then also, and more importantly to us, there was a new ETF being started by, I think it was Barclays Capital. And that's an ETF is big information nowadays because they actually physically hold the gold or hold the silver or hold the precious metal that they're issuing, you know, stock against. And so it says that they're going to physically take the metal off the market by holding it in a bank or something like that. So our mindset has been we're going to probably have to trade more currencies in outside markets while we find more fundamentals, but in the big picture, Todd, our mindset goes back to cash, it goes back to the slow exports, and it goes back to the fact that we don't see the validity in this rally right now, especially when it comes to soybeans. So we're just kind of taking a step back, like you said, and looking at more of the big picture stuff.
And when you look at this big picture, obviously you're not particularly bullish on the market. I don't know whether I'd call you friendly. Are you neutral, or is it bearish for you?
Well, I think we'd be friendly on the corn potential if the wheat leads us higher. But I would say we're negative the beans. You know, we wrote back last fall to our clients that we had some market expectations that China would try and revalue because of political pressure here in the States, that the indexes would try and switch from metals and energies to more of the discounted commodities like grains, and interest rates would start to jump up, and the Fed would start to work against us and work against inflation and commodity demand. And so all those things have started to show up in the analysis, and we feel like as we get closer to the second half of the year, it's going to get harder and harder and harder to justify not only these price levels in beans, but especially if we go any higher than this with a spec-led rally especially. I mean, right now in Champaign, the bean price locally is $5.86, and in Delphi it's $5.76 off the web. And meanwhile, May beans is trading $6.06. So we feel like something's going to have to give, and we expect that'll probably happen closer and closer to the time when we get in the planters and get the crop in. And then the market all of a sudden says, wow, look at how bad the fundamentals are, and all of a sudden the bottom falls out. So we don't know if that's going to happen. We suspect it will. And I think the neat thing producers can, you know, utilize and where they have a unique opportunity here is to lock in profit. They can literally lock in 625 note beans and, you know, use some puts, use some bought calls against cash sales and sit back until June and not really care whether the market goes up or down. They can take advantage of the market regardless of which way it goes, knowing that they've locked profit in. And I think that's probably the first time in 3 or 4 years that you've been able to do that in beans. And the reason that is because this huge carryover, both here and in South America, is going to give us some LDP chances, we think.
Speaking of locking profit in and protecting yourself, what have farmers been telling you at this point about their crop insurance decisions now that the numbers are available and they can start looking at those seriously by March the 15th?
That's a good question. Generally speaking, most producers in Illinois and farther out west into Iowa, and I'd say probably our area of Indiana, are really looking hard at the non type of insurance for crop insurance that protects their actual crop, that they're going against the county, like the GRIP and the GRP. They see the statistical probability of having more likelihood of being able to get something in terms of a claim on that, and it's a lot less paperwork, so they're moving more in that direction. The guys that are sticking with the individual crop insurance, like the CRC and the RA, they are upping, generally speaking. I had a client meeting here today, as a matter of fact, from a friend near Logansport, and he's upping his crop insurance levels by about 5% because of the way the February prices shook out. So I think generally the trend is they're upping it, you know, 5% across the board in terms of coverage. But the areas that rely, you know, have better yields historically against the county, they're going to take more of a chance with the GRIP or GRP from what we can tell.
We'll learn more about revenue insurance and the GRP and all those kinds of things Tuesday afternoon during our all-day Ag Outlook meeting. Gary Schnitke will join us at that time to take us through the FarmDoc website and his perceptions of what crop insurance should look like. In fact, Mike, I interviewed him this morning, and he did say that as he looked at those numbers, it seemed that they ought to be upping the coverage levels if they could possibly do it, simply because the idea that we had awfully good numbers here in the month of February for both corn and soybeans. And if you look out, the fundamentals say that by the time the harvest gets around, you could have a pretty good, pretty low market, and they might pay out very well.
One of the big things that we're, you know, trying to integrate with that, you bring up a heck of a good point, is that if clients say, if as many clients would say, I never see my options pay off, there's almost as many say, I never see my crop insurance pay off, in beans especially, because it's hard to make that that level coverage work for you, you know, with a bad crop. And that's where you can really utilize this year with making the crop insurance payment pay off by hedging before you plant at these price levels and know that you're secure. If you have a CRC or an RA policy, you're real secure in the fact that you know that you are guaranteed a certain gross revenue by those policies, and therefore, you know, you do get that payoff from the crop insurance and what kind of money you put down on that bean coverage. So it's something not to be underestimated this year, especially given where we ended up with November bean average prices.
We'll learn more about that Tuesday and more about what you have to think about the marketplace, too. We're looking forward to seeing you then.
Us too, Todd. Have a great weekend.
You too. Mike Zuzulo joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Friday afternoons, and he'll join us in Covington, Indiana for our all-day Agricultural Outlook meeting. That's over at the Beef House. Starts at 8 o'clock Central Time, 9 o'clock in the Eastern Time Zone. Come a little bit earlier than that and get yourself registered. There is no pre-registration required. It is absolutely free to come. There is a charge for the meal at noon. That's $8.50. On that interview with Gary Schnitke, we'll put that in our newsletter for the weekend, and you'll hear it in its entirety on Tuesday of next week. While he's at the Beef House with us, we'll let those of you who don't happen to make it to the Beef House hear that interview. And you can hear it early, of course, on the website as well. That'll be posted this afternoon. Just visit WILLAG.org. You'll see it on the website, and it'll be in the newsletter for the weekend.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 85 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Well, at the bottom of the hour, Jim Angel, state climatologist, will join us to take a look at the agricultural weather. AM 580's own Ed Kieser says tonight across the two-state region will be clear to partly cloudy. Lows will range from 16 in northwestern Illinois to 28 in the far south. And tomorrow, Ed says, in western Illinois, some increasing clouds. Elsewhere, mostly sunny. Highs tomorrow from 38 near Lake Michigan to 54 in the far south. Dave Dickey is here now. He'll take a complete look at your agricultural newscast.
In agricultural news, Health and Human Services Secretary Michael Levitt told a Senate Budget Committee yesterday that local communities need to prepare themselves to handle a potential avian flu pandemic because the federal government will not be able to help thousands of communities at once. Levitt added it's just a matter of time before birds infected with the virus migrate to the U.S. Levitt noted that a public health emergency would arise only if the disease mutated to allow human-to-human infectivity. The Environmental Protection Agency is proposing to equalize the way it treats ethanol plants in a way that appears to benefit fuel producers. Currently, an operator of an ethanol plant that produces alcohol for human consumption does not need to get an EPA Clean Air Act permit until the plant's air pollution emissions exceed 250 tons per year. However, the operator of a fuel ethanol plant must apply for the EPA permit when emissions reach 100 tons a year. The EPA proposal would reclassify ethanol fuel plants so they no longer would be considered chemical processing plants, thus allowing for the 250 ton per year trigger level to be applied. The Senate Ag Committee will take up USDA's compliance with the Packers and Stockyards Act next Thursday. Iowa Senator Tom Harkin says USDA's oversight of the Grain Inspection Packers and Stockyards Administration is troubling.
We've waited a long time, and the hearing is badly needed. The IG's report that we requested revealed many problems that need to be addressed and corrected. I hope that the hearings that we have will point out the shortcomings that we have. We'll point out that what the Inspector General's findings were needs to be incorporated in legislation. We're going to find out why USDA hasn't been enforcing the law.
Harkin, along with Chuck Grassley, requested the hearing. Harkin says the problem is not incompetence, but rather the attitudes of GPSA administrators.
There's an attitude that's prevalent in the Department of Agriculture, but I think it flows from the White House. The attitude is hands off. Let people do what they want to do. Forget about regulations. just says, "Oh, laissez-faire. Just let the system go. Don't put any brakes on. Don't put any regulations out there. Just let it go."
Meanwhile, Harkin and Grassley have submitted a bill incorporating GAO recommendations and producer concerns. Up to now, the issue has received a cool reception in the U.S. House, but Harkin is hopeful a compromise can be reached soon.
Staff and groups will be sitting down together in the next few weeks to work out the differences, and I hope we'll have a compromise that will reauthorize our mandatory price reporting as soon as possible. USDA has had 4 years to improve the program. It's failed to do so. We just can't wait any longer. So I support a five-year extension of the law, as does Senator Grassley, as long as the GAO findings and other concerns from producer groups are incorporated into the law.
Harkin's bill would establish an Office of Special Counsel with the sole responsibility of investigating and prosecuting violations on matters of competition. The measure would also amend the Packers and Stockyards Act to strengthen both producer protections and USDA's authority. China's National Development and Reform Commission yesterday said PRC ethanol blended gasoline has reached 10.2 million metric tons a year in the nine provinces testing the gas under a pilot program. 20% of all gasoline used in China consists of biofuels. China has become the world's third largest producer of ethanol after Brazil and the U.S. Thailand has now suspended free trade talks with the U.S. The news comes on the heels of the Prime Minister's decision to dissolve the lower house of parliament and call for new elections next month. Thai officials said they have informed U.S. negotiators that free trade talks will be suspended during the change in government. Pioneer Hybrid announced yesterday that it will release its own brand of Roundup Ready corn and soybean seeds by 2009. The technology is being developed by Delaware-based DuPont and is part of Pioneer's broader plan to quit paying Monsanto licensing fees for use of GMO traits. And major U.S. poultry processors say they have no plans to reduce production despite lagging export sales and lower domestic chicken prices. That from spokespersons of Tyson Foods, Pilgrim's Pride, and Sanderson Farms. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you to join us next Tuesday at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana, for our all-day Agricultural Outlook meeting. It kicks off at 8 o'clock Central. Up next, if you listen to enough farm news, you'll hear phrases like farm gate to plate and field to fork to describe the industry. This story is about the end of that food chain and how agriculture is involved in the food service industry. Seniors at the University of Illinois run the Spice Box. It's a fine dining restaurant open twice a week during the spring semester and part of the Agricultural College's hospitality management program. That's right, restaurant managers are trained in the U of I's College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. And putting together the menu, the budget, and the staff for a fine dining experience is a nerve-wracking task, says instructor Jill North.
And I kind of tell them that, you know, if they weren't nervous, then I'd be even more nervous. Because I really feel that because it is such an undertaking and it's such a big project, and they put so much of themselves and their own creativity into their theme and their menu and this whole evening, that if they aren't a little, you know, apprehensive or nervous, then that means they're not really thinking everything through.
Each senior in the program is responsible for one meal from the beginning to the end. They plan the menu, find a chef, set the budget, schedule the staff from the dishwashers to the servers, and they pick the theme. When the job is done, they're relieved and very proud.
There's a huge amount of pride. Relief, obviously, to a certain degree. And if everything, you know, most of the time they go pretty well. And so I think pride's a good word. I think they're very proud of themselves. I think they've, you know, it's quite an accomplishment. And I think that they, you know, are really happy about it. And sometimes there's 2 weeks afterwards, they have to fill out all their financial documents and go through the process of reporting their financials. So it's not quite over yet. But after they've turned in that final, you know, portfolio, they're just, usually ecstatic.
There are 21 seniors in the U of I's hospitality management program. Each is responsible for a fine dining experience. The U of I students are sought after and usually put on the career fast track to general manager after graduation. This is in no small part because of the food science portion of their university experience. Most often, hospitality management is taught solely in the business college. That's not the case at the University of Illinois. There is far more to food than the numbers. There's a science and a flair to the numbers, too. The public is invited to the Spice Box for the fine dining experience. Just drop Illinois Spice Box into Google for complete details. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
Well, our all-day Ag Outlook meeting is just a few days away. Next Tuesday, we think we put together one of our strongest lineups in years, and you should come away with several ideas for your farm operation. We'll talk about the corn market, the soybean market. We'll take a look at what's been happening in the wheat, the cash grain market, along with a look at along with a look at many other agricultural topics, including agricultural policy. Otto Doring of Purdue will join us, along with Bob Thompson. And at the end of the day, we'll take a look at crop insurance and how you can use the FarmDoc website to help you make some of those decisions. And you can ask questions all day long, including of Gary Schnittke, who's an expert in crop insurance here from the Ag Econ Department at the University of Illinois. Speaking of another expert, we have him online right now, and that's Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois, where he is the general manager. Good afternoon, Bruce. We are glad to have you on board again this week in a new capacity.
Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Tell me about the cash grain market in your new area.
Well, interesting week. Yesterday, the rail basis took a real shock. When the board kind of unexpectedly rallied, we saw both NS and CN values drop off pretty precipitously, pretty much all the way across the board on corn. Beans were steady. Processor numbers looked like they were steady, corn and beans both.
And then have you been watching the river numbers since you
River left? Numbers, SIF has tried to be better through the week on corn, but it just can't offset that barge freight. Barge freight was, maybe 360% of tariff last week, 390 today, so up 30 points. So that's like 4 or 5 cents from a central Illinois location. So 4 to 5 cents a bushel more to get a barge from, say, Havana to New Orleans from this week to last Friday.
I know it's only been a week in place there at Ludlow, but see much difference in the way farmers view the marketplace from one region of the state to the other?
No, I wouldn't say so, really. Looks to me like we've got a little more wheat in this locality, and I've had a few more comments from people calling in walking by just talking about their wheat crop, which is something I didn't have at Williamsville.
No, certainly not in Williamsville. There's not a lot of wheat in that part of the state. Now, what are they asking you most often this week?
Well, a lot of it was just why on the rally yesterday, what happened on the pop, and it was kind of unexpected out there. So I think that was one of the bigger questions. And we're in kind of a volatile period here. You know, we're looking at dry concerns in the Western Belt and watching the forecast out in the plains, and that's kind of keeping the market on edge. And the volume is thinning out, so anybody who steps in to do anything in volume can move it one way or another pretty easily.
And what are your bids for the day?
Let's see. We are at 220 tonight at Paxton and 582 on the beans.
We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op in Ludlow, Illinois. He's the general manager and joined us each and every Friday right here on AM 580's Closing Market Report. In just a couple of minutes, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather here in the Midwest. Jim Angel will join us, state climatologist from the state of Illinois. Up next, your regional newscast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Jim Meadows. A proposal to shore up coal mine safety passed the Illinois House on a 114-0 vote today and now heads to the state Senate. The proposal would require miners to carry portable emergency oxygen tanks and require mines to install wireless communications devices underground. Governor Blagojevich and Democratic lawmakers called for the new safety measures in response to two mining disasters in West Virginia in January. The University of Illinois and the state of Illinois are teaming up to give soldiers coming home from Iraq and Afghanistan a chance for a business school scholarship. The U of I is awarding up to 110 new scholarships for Illinois-based veterans and active-duty military personnel. Recipients can get a master's degree in business through the school's 20-month executive MBA program. They can take classes at the Urbana-Champaign campus or the Illini Center in Chicago. 12 jurors have already been picked to hear the case against Maurice Legrone Jr., who's charged in the drowning deaths of three children in Clinton Lake. But the selection process is continuing today in Bloomington to find four alternate jurors for the trial. A University of Illinois researcher says many rural healthcare clinics are facing financial problems, even those that were set up to address a shortage of available clinics. Noreen Shugru told a symposium at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana today that rural health care facilities suffer from unstable Medicaid reimbursement rates and a small base of patients. A musician who once played the drums for the Jackson 5 has been stabbed to death in Gary, Indiana. Gary police are investigating the death of 54-year-old Johnny Jackson, who was found dead Wednesday night. He's been called a cousin, but it's not clear if Johnny Jackson was related by blood to the famous Jackson family. Indiana's Sagamore of the Wabash will no longer be the state's top honor. Governor Mitch Daniels is reviving an additional award called the Sachem, which will be given just once a year. He's announced that baseball coaching legend John Wooden is the 2005 winner, and the 2006 award will go to former Notre Dame president Father Theodore Hesburgh. I'm Jim Meadows, AM 580 News.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. With every kernel, every grain, every seed, ADM sees possibilities to improve everyday life. ADM, resourceful by nature.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Tom Gleason, asking you to join us next Tuesday at our All-Day Ag Outlook meeting in the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. We'll have a weather then panel there that includes our own chief meteorologist from the radio station, Ed Kieser, and Mark Russo of Chesapeake Energy in Chicago, Illinois, who you hear right here on this station on Monday afternoons. Joining us this afternoon to take a look at the ag weather across the Midwest is Jim Angel, state climatologist here in Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Jim. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather we had in the past week and what we can expect over the weekend.
Yeah, you know, we've actually had weather fairly typical for this time of year, highs in the 40s, lows in the 20s, and that's pretty much right on target. Been pretty dry. February as a whole was about half of our normal precipitation statewide, and here in Champaign we only had about a half an inch, and normally we get close to 2 inches, so pretty dry, kind of dried out the soil moisture, and stream flows are down, and groundwater levels are down as well. So that's kind of where we stand right now. I guess maybe one bit of good news is that there is a chance of rain this weekend. On Sunday, there's a chance of rain and or snow. At least the potential is to get about an inch here, or up to an inch, I should say. Southern Illinois may get up to 2 inches out of this system.
And that would put them in good shape. And they aren't nearly as far behind, is this correct, as the rest of the state?
That's right, yeah. Southern Illinois is in much better shape precipitation-wise. It's really kind of, the hierarchy is that they're the wettest, we're kind of in the middle, and the north is by far the driest. So,
any expectations as you look at drought monitors or other forecasts that are coming from the National Weather Service that parts of the Midwest, like Southern Illinois, might dry out?
Yeah, I think we're seeing a trend towards that. You know, the big thing that we're worried about right now is there's this a very sizable drought in the Texas, Oklahoma, Arkansas area, and that seems to be spreading into Missouri and Iowa and Illinois. So that may all kind of link up before everything is said and done.
And then come back to the northern part of the state of Illinois where they suffered through a drought last year, and I think they're still in what's considered the midst of a drought.
That's right. They're in the category 2 drought, which is a severe drought, and you know, they had big deficits last year, and they didn't get that much this winter, so they're way behind in terms of soil moisture, especially the further down you go. It's very dry up there.
Geographically, where is that centered and how widespread?
I would say probably the heart of it is to the north of Peoria, kind of along the line up to Rockford, and then over to the Quad Cities, kind of that triangle is probably the core area of the drought right now.
Anything else to add before I let you go for the day?
I think that's it.
Thanks much, Jim.
You're welcome.
Jim Angel, state climatologist here in Illinois, joining us on a Friday afternoon. He's in instead of our normal Steve Hilberg, the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. They're both located right here in Champaign County. And that is today's Closing Market Report. Remember to join us tomorrow morning at 11:30 for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in agriculture. And don't forget, you can sign up for our weekend newsletter on our website. The address is willag.org. It's one of the best newsletters you'll find on the web. It'll be delivered to your email this weekend and include a link to the interview I did with Gary Schnitke this morning. That interview, of course, will air here on AM 580 Tuesday afternoon, about 11 minutes on crop insurance and how to use the FarmDoc website. I'm Todd Gleason. Have a great afternoon.